Air travel, the dream of all dreams. While today, air travel is reserved for the few, the so-called jet set, imagine a future where air travel is attainable for anyone, including the Tom, Dick, and Harrys and their chum. A future where you can relax in leisure while a lovely stewardess serves you Salisbury'd steak on porcelain. Down, boys, she's married. Where mother can relax with her knitting while father puts his feet up and enjoys his pipe and newspaper, all while rocketing through the skies. Sound too good to be true? At Pan Am, we believe this is the future, even one day at supersonic speeds. Yes, a future golden age of air travel, affordable by anyone, enjoyable by all. It's coming. Will you be ready to take to the skies with us?
Now warning zone one. All passengers who checked in last October, or have a lock of golden ticket, or have an alligator support animal, we're now warning zone one.
This is your captain speaking. Please put your seat tray in the upright position. Feel free to ignore the safety video because you will anyway. Frankly, we don't give a shit about you. And we will definitely be hitting turbulence as soon as your coffee is placed on your tray. Enjoy your flight. Or not.
Welcome back to the Sucks Podcast. That's right, we are talking about airline travel with your humble co-travelers and co-pilots on this journey through UX. I'm your host, Brad.
And I am your host, Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
This, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us all every day. We are lovers, not experts.
Salty peanut lovers.
True. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails or straight down into the cold abyss of the Atlantic Ocean. Good morning.
How you guys doing? Wow. Thanks, man. You know, I'm traveling soon. I don't need to hear that.
Are you? Where are you going?
I'm going back east, buddy.
Oh, yeah? Are you a nervous flyer?
Bam, bam. I'm a nervous flyer for the beginning and end because somebody once told me those are the most dangerous moments. Like once you're in the air, you're good, which probably isn't true, entirely true, but statistically speaking. So I'm looking forward to seeing family. Ticket prices are ridiculous, as everybody knows. I mean, you know, inflation is crazy, but it's the summer, you know. I mean, ticket prices, actually, I looked at the scale, they're not as high as ever, you know, they're not gas, you know, not like gas, right. Like they've remained pretty not insane. I mean, they're insane, but
give it time. Here's the thing that bugs me about ticket prices when it comes to airline travel. So you have to fly back east.
Yeah.
And Joe, you as well. And I have to fly to Ohio. And what really bothers me, number one, it's very difficult to get from Los Angeles to Ohio. Mm-hmm. Like there's no direct flight.
Really?
I've got to stop somewhere. And it's a nightmare. What really gets me, though, is that it costs the same amount or even more to fly to Ohio as it would for me to fly to, Paris.
Yes.
Or someplace where I would want to go to, family aside.
Yeah.
And every holiday I go through that, I'm like, why am I spending all this money to go back to Jersey when I could just spend the same money and go down to Costa Rica?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My wife and I, every single time we say that once we get the bill, you know, once we add the Airbnb, we get the rental car, we're parking at the airport, get the plane tickets. We're like, why don't we just go to Cancun? Why don't we go to Hawaii?
Right.
And we're going to, like, that's the plan. The plan is make that trip. Yeah. Producer Joe will watch the kids and we'll fly. we'll
that'll be
off.
A fun week for them.
Yeah.
They're going to learn a lot.
All right, guys. So do we want to just jump into it? Now, Brad, you and I talked before the show. We wanted to preface this with our audience that we're not really particularly passionate about this topic.
No.
And I'll tell you why. What are you? Are you passionate about this topic?
No, I just don't care.
And here's why. Here's why I think we're not passionate about it. And no offense to producer Joey, came up with this topic. I think it's a great topic.
Yes,
it's absolutely. A great thing to
Universal
explore.
Universal topic. Yeah. Tons but of UX problems. Sure.
I think it's one of those things where it's just a thing that we've come to accept. It's just like, here's the experience. It doesn't get any better or worse than this, but it does get worse, as we're going to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. And it does get better, too. And I think where my fatalism comes in, which is kind of my disinterest in this topic, is that when we talk about things like Spotify and we tell them how they need to fix it, then they fix it. I don't think that we're going to fix air travel today. You know, no. And I like fixing problems.
Ooh, wow.
I think that's where I'm running into right. some
wow. We always fix things, Brad. This is going to be a first.
Well, let's make it a challenge then.
Yeah,
well,
I'd add to that, because it's been, you know, I don't want this to turn into like a bad stand-up comedy bit. Like
I do.
how bad is airline food and blah blah. I mean, they've been trying to fix it for years.
Joe, it's 100% going to turn into a bad airline stand-up.
Yes, that's exactly what it's going to do.
Joe, it's Father's Day, so why would there not be dad jokes?
That's true. But I think we're all on the same page. I it's a little fatalist to try to fix airline travel, but maybe we can.
But you know what? It's a challenge. Maybe that's the best part.
Yeah.
Okay. So all right. So you know, I mean, we should move it along. I mean, you know, now that our audience knows that we don't care about this topic, they should keep listening. So.
Why? I'm not clear.
Why are you here? Go play all with right. your kids. Okay, let's do it.
Okay, well, let's jump into the news. As you guys all know, that we've retired the news bit from the format, so we will not be talking about increased flight cancellation. I apologize that I went a little long today on all the stuff that we're not covering. Sorry about that, Dave, but I think this is important to our listeners and our users, so I'm glad that they got to hear the 10 minutes that we spent on Elon Musk and what's been happening, you know, with these major news networks. And so thank you so much for letting me not talk about it. But
no problem, Brad.
Yeah
no good problem. Stuff. Wink, wink.
What's that?
I just winked.
That's weird. All right. Let's take a quick break to pay some bills, and then we will come back and talk about shitty airline UX. And we are back with our main topic, the UX of one of our least favorite things of all time, air travel. They say that the journey is half the fun. Whoever said that never flew on Spirit Airlines, or they've never connected to the Atlanta airport. Just total, complete hell.
You know, Brad, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to go off script here. I'm going to say that it isn't our least favorite things. Okay. I'd call it a love hate thing. Mm-hmm. And this is the funny thing about this is we're going to talk about the user journey, right?
Yeah.
We're going to start at the beginning.
Please.
All right. We're going to talk about tickets and all that, blah, blah, blah. All right. But the thing that I find amazing about how far we've advanced as human beings is the UX journey doesn't end with the miracle of flight. You know what I mean? Like you go to an amusement park, you're like, wow, I'm on a roller coaster. Like that's your user journey, like getting on that roller coaster, right? But for some reason, when we go far and beyond that, we shoot up into the sky at 30,000, 40,000 feet, mm-hmm. and we're looking at the window and there's clouds and birds below us. Mm-hmm. That's not the end of the user journey. This is just a freaking taxi cab. We just want to get to see Grammy, right? and we're complaining. We're not stopping for a moment and going, looking out the window going, this is fucking cool, right? Which I make myself do every once in a while. Like I'll tell myself, enjoy this. Like you're paying thousands of dollars for your family
Truly.
To be, you know, between Earth and space. Like that's pretty neat.
But that's not what we're paying for. I agree with what you're saying, but that's not in fact what we're paying for. We are paying for very expensive, very lousy taxi cabs.
But you get that in the middle. And I think you got to embrace it. That's all I'm saying. So next time you're flying, look out the window.
Yeah.
Stare at some clouds.
I'm with you. I understand.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Joe's trying to talk, but he's on mute. So he's lost his window. So let's talk.
Why'd you tell him? Why'd you tell him?
I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as Dave said to me last week, have you listened to this podcast? Because what we're trying to do is fix things. Air travel used to be amazing, and they just keep making it worse and worse and worse. And worse, and we keep paying more and more for it.
Are you talking about the 50s when you were a kid? I don't. When was it?
Yes, I'm 100.
I do think that you're onto something, Joe, and I just don't know if it's true or not. Like, I do think that we have this romanticized notion of what air travel once was, or what the promise of air travel is, and we teed that up in our little teaser bit thing.
Right. But we've seen the commercials, but we didn't.
Yeah. We've seen the movie version of what air travel should look like. I'm going to go right to an Inception as the most recent example that I can remember. You know, they're all in like these beautiful first class seats and yada, yada, yada. And,
I think basically what it was is it was, it's what happens when it becomes accessible for everyone. Like it used to just be a rich person's thing. Right. And it's like anything that's a rich person's thing at first, like it's awesome in the beginning. Right. And then it's like, oh yeah, we got to give this to everybody. so if you want that experience, just get a first class ticket for $1,000, you know, or $1,500 or whatever it is.
Well, I was going to save this for later, but piano bars and steaks cooked at your table side and drink lounges, like those used to exist.
No, they did not, sir. I challenge you on that. You are absolutely not right about that. Show me a piano bar on an airplane.
I will. It was on American. It was
Google
on
it. Google it, producer Joe. Come back to us when it gets there in the script. I want it to be dubious. Real. I want it to be real. But you can still get those things. You get a private jet. Get a private jet. Even if it's not first class, Brad. Yeah. You're saying first class isn't like that now?
No.
Get a private jet. It exists. You just got to pay. Like anything, you just got to pay. All right. So let's start with our user journey. You want to start or our persona?
Let's start with our personas first. Okay. Yeah. And that's a real easy one. I'll take that one and you can take the user journey. User persona is everyone. Full stop. You know, this is the easiest user personas we'll ever have to define. Everyone has to fly. So it's literally everyone. Full stop.
I wouldn't say everyone. There are people who will never fly. But I get what you're saying. It's a very wide net that you cast here.
Which is a UX problem, right? Like the more specific you can be with your personas, the more prescriptive you can be with your solution. So I think that maybe that's part of the original sin with air travel. When we open it up to everyone, like you mentioned, right? That's a real challenge. That's a design challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess in that instance, you've really got to make it accessible. And they're just kind of like, I don't know, like streamline a lot of things, you know?
So the user journey.
The user journey. Okay.
Yeah. You want to walk us through it?
As a user, I want to. Ellipses. what's my line here?
People don't realize this, but every word of this podcast that's ever been recorded, including what I'm saying right now, is all scripted.
I am just a robot. I just chew lines and spit them out. I have no personality. I can't do anything off the cuff, I swear. Okay, so first of all, what you want to do is buy tickets, right? We sit down, and this is probably my biggest pain point out of all of them, because it's, you know, I guess I could just click through this list here, right?
Well,
let's talk about travel agents.
Can we back up for just a second?
Yeah, back it up.
Okay, user journey. So the beginning of the user journey is I, as a user, make a decision that I want to go somewhere for any reason, right? And from there, then I have to figure out where do I go to purchase a ticket. So that's where we get into the websites. And then I'll hand it over to you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, do we want to talk about travel agents? Does anybody still use them? I mean, they were great to walk you through everything we're about to talk about.
So I kept this in the script because I think that this makes us sound like we're 200 years old. And I kept it in so we could make fun of whoever put this in the script, whether it was you or Joe.
It wasn't me. I've never used a travel agent in my life.
It was me. And honestly, I've never used an actual travel agent for personal travel. I have, however, and this is why, you know, I can dive into a lot of this stuff, were for major corporations who had travel departments.
Oh, that is true.
That's true.
That would, I mean, they're just personalized and helpful. And it's like, oh, I got to fly here for business, but then I might continue on here personally. Can I pay for that personally? And I want to bring my dog and you got to navigate me through class Y and class X fare seats and how I can upgrade. And then even that got outsourced and that just became like,
they still exist though. I see I see places like little hole in the wall places that say travel and they have the maps and everything on the window. And I'm like,
they look pretty sketchy, huh?
I kind of want to walk. Yeah. It's like, that's where you go to like lose all your money. I kind of want to go in and just, you know, check it out.
It'd be kind of fun. I'll walk in and say, hey, I've got $600 and I'd like to go somewhere. Like, where can you send me?
It's like going to AAA. Like, do they still do triptychs? You guys remember those?
Oh, like a road trip? I remember those. Yeah. Actually, those recently, are pretty good UX.
Yeah, I recently looked through a bunch of my old stuff from like college and whatnot, and I found my trip out here to California.
I was just going to say, I still have mine. It's right here. I kept it as a kind of a,
Can you walk us through it, Joe? Is it accessible? I'd love to like kind of like remind myself.
It goes through like every state and they highlight it. They highlight the road you go on. But oddly, once I get to California, it ends. Like they didn't direct me to my endpoint. I don't understand. Yeah. I'm
ripped out. Producer Joe, for the record, is holding up a customized to Joseph Ruggieri triptych from AA. AAA.
AAA.
Slip.
Triptych from AA. Skip the bar. Go directly home.
First leg, New Jersey to Christiansburg, Virginia. And it's literally like a turn by turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show us. Like every map.
Yeah. Oh, this is so cool.
And like what, like who to call when you're there. Wow. Like bridge.
Restaurants,
tunnel
right?
information.
Do they still do this? That's what I want to know.
I bet you they
probably
do.
I want to go. I'm going to go into an office and ask for one.
You know what? This could be a travel experience of the future is where we rewind and we try to do travel as an experience without technology. I think there's something to that. That might be fun.
Yeah. Well, but for now, let's fast forward. Let's get into the UX of AirFlight.
Yes. While we're still on travel agents, though, and you know, I think this is going to be a shorter episode. I swear to God, I really do.
Half hour.
When I was an assistant a long time ago. I worked for rich people, and they didn't have travel agents. Eventually, he had his own private plane, which we can get into. But before that, we used Amex. I used Amex.
Okay.
Specifically, like Amex services to book
American Express.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if people are looking for that experience, I would recommend being a billionaire and getting the biggest Amex solid platinum card or whatever.
Right. Right.
Cause that was pretty cool. I could just get them on the phone at any time and they were de facto travel agents.
Yeah. Again, the UX of being rich is just, I mean, what else is there to say?
I would recommend it. I would highly recommend it.
Right. Yeah, those are the outsourced company that I'm talking about. It went from being like an in-house service to being outsourced to Amex Travel Services.
Right.
So then we get into the actual ways that people really book air travel today.
Real people.
Real people.
So let's go to the websites, guys. I find it interesting that the one that I use isn't on here. You've got Hotline, Travelocity, and Kayak listed. I exclusively use Expedia. Have since it began, since I began flying.
Oh, wow. I completely forgot about them. Sure.
Yeah.
Orbis I used to use.
Okay. It's funny because you get – I don't think – do people like compare and contrast? I think it's gotten to the point where they all have the same prices. And so – I want to test this theory, right? I think we should all go onto a different website, pick a destination, and just see what we come up with. What do you think?
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to stick with Expedia just because it's what I know.
Who wants to take Expedia?
Google? Can I take Google?
You take Google, and I'll take Google. Kayak. Let's all go from LAX to
someplace that we would want to go. Someplace interesting. Let's not.
Yeah. How about Cincinnati?
Ohio?
No. How about Hong Kong?
Okay, perfect. LAX to Hong Kong, leaving next Sunday.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, it's going to be expensive. All right. Wait, who's taking what? Are you doing Google, Brad? I didn't know Google has a travel. Oh, the search, right? Okay, got it. Yeah.
Google.com/flights, which is typically how I
think you can just do it from Google. You can just type
in. You don't have to type in flights. Just type in what you're looking for.
Okay, totally.
LAX. What is the airline code for Hong Kong? Just HK?
HKG.
No. Okay, HKG.
And the date?
Is the 10th? For how long? A week?
Sure.
Let's say July 10th through July 16th. How about that?
Perfect.
All right. Departing July 10th. Returning July 16th.
There was a lot there, Brad. Like it's the difference between me and you. You want a day buffer before you go back to work, right? Mm-hmm. I want to maximize my trip. I would have said the 17th, but that's fine. Especially with the time zone difference. I'll do what you said.
All right. Well, for expedience, I'm already there. I don't know about you guys.
You're in Hong Kong?
I've got my results. I'm ready.
I thought you were in Hong Kong. I was like, wow, Google wins.
All right. Brad, what do you have for cheapest?
Okay. The cheapest that I have, so I'm on Google Flights. I'm bypassing Best, and I'm going to Other. That's where I can find the cheapest. And
why Other? Explain.
Well, they're recommending wisely what are the best options for me, which is not the cheapest.
Interesting. Okay.
So Google does that, which I think is nice.
What are the metrics? Is it like
less... time in the air, pretty much, number of stops, stuff like that.
Okay.
Reasonable stuff. So right. The cheapest I found is $1,672 for one ticket.
Interesting. Now, Brad, to piggyback on that, Expedia immediately brought up, it took a little bit longer, it just gave me the results, immediately brought up sorted by price lowest. Maybe they just know me.
They probably know their clientele.
Right. Cookies. Joe? I didn't tell you. My cheapest is $1,966.
On which airline?
On multiple airlines. American Airlines, $6,298. And then other American Airlines ones. Yeah.
Okay. Because I've got Alaska for $1,600. And then American, I've got mostly in the $2,700 range. What's interesting is actually Kayak gave me a Priceline result for $1,600.
Well, Kayak does that. That was how they started their business model, was that they were the first to compare and contrast between all of the different airlines. And everyone else started doing that. But it seems like Expedia is the loser here.
It seems like I should change to Google. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So
Joe, which one did you use?
I used Kayak, and the best fare was co-promoted between them and Priceline for $1,600 on an Alaska airline flight with two stops both ways, which is interesting to stop over the Pacific Ocean somewhere.
Well, for the record, I have good point. I have one stop, only one stop on my departing, and then two stops returning. Yeah. But what's also nice about Google is that it tells me that this price, $1,672, is typical for trying to book at this time.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So it'll tell me if it's high or typical, and that can help in my decision making process. So good on Google for that.
Okay.
So bottom line on this, I don't think that any one service does like an exceptional job of like, you're not going to find that $300 ticket to Hawaii on any of these sites. And that might work for like hotels, because like there probably are, when you get close, unsold rooms that they want to sell. But I don't think there's ever an unsold seat on an airline. Like
not too much these days. Yeah.
And I think the only problem with Google is they don't include some airlines. Like I don't think they include Southwest.
Yes.
So you have to like kind of still think in your head, like checking other stuff. But I find Google to be a great place to start the research. And then I just go to the airline and buy directly from them.
I would always recommend doing that, is like once you get that result from whatever search engine that you're using, whatever site, go to that direct airline. Number one, because when you have to have changes and stuff, it's way easier to deal with them directly than have to go through Expedia. And it might be cheaper. So I think, Dave, when you're using Expedia, that's very much akin to people clinging to AOL.
I know that's true. I think maybe in this instance, but like we could. And here's the funny thing. We could probably run through a whole bunch of different flight patterns and get different winners and losers.
Right.
So that's the interesting thing about this, is that like, it's like the Wild West out there. Like there's no, like you go to buy a TV, like you go to buy a new iPhone, right? Why would you do that? You go to buy a new Pixel, right? You know exactly the price you're going to get. Sure, maybe you'll get 10% off here and there. Although this is probably a terrible example, because these phones usually don't waver that much. But let's say you're going to buy a new TV. You can go to different places. Maybe you'll get a few dollars off here and there, but generally it's going to be around the same price. Not so with airlines. Like they differ not just on these different sites, but different times of the day. And I know it's in the script here, guys, but have you guys ever researched whether this time to buy, like, is there any truth to like when you buy, like on a Thursday at 4:59 a.m.,
right,
you get like the best, the prices. Is that true? Because there's a lot of people hawking that on the YouTubes and the social media and like vlogging. Like there's so many articles I've read where people, and they all vary. Yeah. I've never gotten a definitive answer.
I did some quick research putting this script together, and I found one that said between 47 and 114 days, which doesn't narrow it down at all. It's basically like a month and a half to 4 months out is the peak buying time. I'm like, that's when I buy all my tickets, because I don't make plans more than 6 months out or within, you know.
So it almost sounds like they did the research as to when people buy tickets. And that's when somewhere in there, that's when they'll give the best price, but not on a particular day or time.
And I fly quite a bit. I don't know that I've ever seen it where like, oh my God, I waited till Tuesday and this $1,600 ticket is now $900. I just don't think I've ever seen that. Brad, have you?
I think I have.
Yeah.
I can't really say why.
Yeah.
Back to our original point about not caring about this topic. like, this is the funny thing, because we know this is a problem, right? We know there's no consistency in prices. Right. We know that there's no, like, there's no way to gauge. You just kind of have a roundabout figure in your head. Like, for me, it's like, I would like to pay $350 a ticket to go back east. Like, that's my, and that's always been my price point, which is odd. You got to give it to airlines. The first time I flew out here, like 20 years ago, that was my price point. That's still my price point. This time I paid about 600 and something because the tickets are crazy and I bought them pretty late. But generally, it's around the 300 to 400 range that I like to spend money.
Yeah. And we usually have to go back during peak travel times too, which really suck.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it does.
It's the holidays. We know what we're getting into.
Anyway, the part that really frustrates me about air travel is, you know, the starting with why. I don't know why that these prices are so opaque and fluid. I assume it's just to bilk more people out of more money, but like, wouldn't some consistency, foster a different travel culture where we would want to travel more, or we would,
I think so. And I think it also comes down to lack of competition. I mean, with all the consolidation, there's really only three like legacy carriers anymore: Delta, United, and American. And then all the other regionals. Yeah, there's no more Continental, there's no more Pan Am, there's no more TWA.
You've got your Southwest, you've got your Frontiers, you got your...
But those aren't really legacy carriers. I mean, those are regional carriers. Those have different operating procedures. I mean, the major actual carriers that have hubs, it's down to United, Delta, and American domestically anyway.
You know, it'd be great if we had an expert on who knew why these tickets fluctuate. Like, we really have nothing to add.
Yeah. So if you're one of our users and you're an expert in air travel and you want to join us, well, too bad, because I don't really want to revisit this topic again. So
all right.
Okay. So that so navigating benefits, maybe we cut this for time. What do you guys think?
Well, benefits, credit card miles, frequent flyer miles, stuff like that. We've actually covered this in
I think this does help. I mean, you know, people who rack up these things, they get free flights all the time. Like, I should do it. I don't know why I don't. Yeah. You guys do it? Does anybody do it?
I'll tell you what, recently I did. American actually has one of the better ones because I had some miles on it. And I was able to actually combine mileage and cash to, which you almost normally can't do. It's either one or the other. You either have to have 50,000 miles to go 10 feet or pay the cost. Yeah. That was actually a good user experience. I think it's hard to, actually build up loyalty because, again, I was just talking about like the various legacy carriers, and I think they have kind of almost like market separated themselves. Like, Delta has Atlanta, United has Chicago, American has Dallas-Fort Worth. It's like, if I want to go to Orlando, I'm probably on Delta. If I want to go back to New Jersey, to Philadelphia, I'm definitely on American. And it's like, it's almost hard to be like, I want to go Delta all the time, or I want to go American all the time.
I think use cases are pretty much reduced to business travel. You know, I had to travel a lot for business, I was taking the same routes all the time. And I was thus I was taking the same airlines all the time. And I was able to develop, I was like, the platinum on American Airlines status and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. And they changed this too, guys. Like, this is when I stopped doing that, because I used to do American Airlines exclusively because I was like, okay, I like their service. Right. I'm going to do this loyalty thing. I'm going to travel them all the time. I'm going to rack up points. I didn't travel that much, so I didn't get a ton of free flights or points off. But now what they do, I just stopped doing it entirely because in the past like 5 or 6 years, they've done this thing where like, if you get like a cheap ticket, like, you know, the one where they kick you to the back and you may or may not be able to put your carries on.
Yep.
Like, they give you less points for that. So it's not miles anymore. It used to be very basic. You flew from point A to point B, they'd give you those miles and those would count. But they count less now for discounted tickets. Mm-hmm. I think discounted tickets.
Yeah, but I was going to say, that's kind of the biggest issue with this whole topic, is that like, even if you can build up miles, you need an encyclopedic knowledge of their policies. Like, you need qualifying miles or qualifying points or travel miles to even get to a point. And even if you get to like, you know, a platinum or diamond status, like, you get this, you know, phone book of like options, and you've got to sign up for, you know, I've got to like buy a certain date, add my companion travelers. And it's
totally
so infuriating. And
I'll add on to that, Joe. I think my frustration as a user here is I have these miles built up. So, I have all these points or miles or whatever it is. I want to redeem them. I find that it's still going to cost money. And then I compare it to other options, and it would still cost less to go with a competing airline.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I could use those miles on American, or I could, you know, just spend cash money, which I would have to spend on American anyway to supplement or whatever, and it would cost less with Southwest. So the benefits are shrinking, I think.
Yeah.
Now, the corollary to that is last summer, I redeemed all my credit card miles for,
Trip
to Spain. So we went to Spain for a month, and all that travel was supported by credit card points, which I have been building up over 5 years.
And I think that's the way to go. I think that the loyalty programs are just garbage now, unless you're a frequent flyer, you're a business flyer. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we can put a pin in.
I want to ask you real quick, Brad, how was your experience using credit card miles? Because mine was not so great.
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember. I don't use my credit card too often. I think it was Capital One or Chase. I think it was Chase.
Mm-hmm. We don't want to tell listeners what you use.
Well, hang on a second. Let me get the card so I can read the number. So people can follow along with me on this user journey.
Yeah. Don't forget the number on the back, Brad. I need the number on the back.
It's 344.
Well. Okay, cool.
Zip code of 91325. You can edit that out, right? It was definitely like not as optimal as going through Google. Mm-hmm. They did have their own portal for all these flights and everything. And that those portals, again, are not consistent with the prices that you're going to see on even Orbitz or Expedia or whatever. So that's
are they inflated? Right? Are they inflated? I would gather they're inflated.
They are. They are. Yeah. So like, I mean, come on. I mean, when we're talking about building products, platforms, and experiences, and building trust is something that I ascribe to all the time. There is no trust.
Right.
They've eroded any trust.
Yeah.
So the fact that, you know, these credit card companies and these travel companies and these Expedias and all that are inflating their prices means that there is no trust in this experience. So that's probably an important thing for us to touch on, is like a fundamental problem with airline travel today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is we know that they're trying to just screw us every chance they get.
Well, but here's the thing I will add. And it's kind of like when we talked about the movies where we know the reason the prices for food is so high is because the bad deal they've always had with the movie studios. Mm-hmm. Well, here I read an article. I may be completely talking out of my ass. Please always look up anything we say. Yes. But I read an article once that's, you know,
speaking of trust, don't trust us.
don't trust your fellas at the Sucks podcast. I read an article that basically like airlines, it's hard for them to make a profit. Like they're always having a difficult time making profit. So a lot of this trust thing is like, they're just trying to stay in business.
Right? I agree. And I have that later on to tee that up to a question for you guys. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's not like these companies are like banks where they're just reaping in record profits while everyone else is getting screwed. Yeah. But I think that they're not mutually exclusive, where you know, building trust and consistency in the experience will help them in their bottom lines. But anyway, I'll save that a little bit later.
I was gonna say, I'll add one last thing to this whole kind of deceptive practice of like loyalty programs is like the global alliances, because there's, you know, a couple. There's Star Alliance and Sky Team, and what's the other one? One World. Mm-hmm. And really all they do is further silo it, because it's like one major US carrier with one European carrier. It's like it gives you this like perception of like, I can travel on any airline and kind of get points back and forth. But no, it's with Star Alliance, it's United and Lufthansa, one of the major Europeans, One World, American, Cathay, Sky Team is Delta, Air France, Korean Air. So it's like literally it's just furthering the perception of flexibility, but it's really what it's doing is further siloing you into certain loyalty programs that may not always be usable.
All right. So loyalty programs, we've said, trust issues, not really great. Mm-hmm. So all this isn't good. The user experience so far with air travel, buying the tickets, trying to use our loyalty program, trying to find the cheapest flight. Terrible. Yeah. Terrible. Yeah. Okay. And we've demonstrated that as well live. Okay.
Yeah. So it's confusing all that stuff. Sure.
Let's move. Yeah. And Joe, awesome bringing back deceptive practices. I was very impressed there. Mm-hmm. Callback. Okay. Arriving. Let's talk about arriving at the airport. Who wants to jump into this? Let's paint a picture.
Well, our users' mileage might vary here. Frequent flyer mileage. might vary. We're all in Los Angeles, and LAX, I gotta think, is one of the worst airports in the country.
Oh yeah, you gotta go to world. SNA.
I've been in airports all over the world. I've been to Cuba. The Havana airport is superior to LAX, just to paint a picture. And that's including like when the power went out in the Havana airport for an hour. I'm taking that into consideration. I still think it's superior than LAX.
Why do we do it?
LAX has been under construction for, let's face it, 30 years.
40 years.
Yeah. Well, why do we do it? Like John Wayne Airport, so much better. Long Beach is so much better. Ontario is so much better. Burbank is so much better. I think it's pricing, right? It's good.
Also, the other thing is every airport you just listed, unless you're in Anaheim flying to LA, you're going to be connected through somewhere. Like none of those flights have, you know, you can't fly out.
More direct
John Wayne does. John Wayne has a direct flight. They have direct flight back east.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's usually more expensive. But anyway, carry on.
So I do weigh that into my decision-making process. You know, like, well, I prefer to fly out of Burbank, of course. But if I have to choose between an extra stop versus flying direct from LAX, it's a tough choice. And I, you know, price usually is a determining factor.
All right. So we're there. We're there.
We're at the airport. The airport experience is pretty bad, especially now that you have to park miles and miles and miles away and take some sort of shuttle in with your bags. Now, Joe travels light. Joe doesn't check bags. Now, Dave and I, we do. And that is a huge consideration. Like, of course, it's a huge pain in the ass to try and travel with checked bags.
Right.
And sometimes you got to do it. And you got to navigate all those checked bags on this shuttle that's packed with people, then make it to the airport. And then sometimes there's curbside check-in, which is wonderful. And I will pay that. I mean, pretty much you have to pay a tip to do that. $5 a bag or minimum. I try to make it more than that. But that's well worth it, right? Do you guys do that?
I don't know. The kiosk you go in. Like when you go in, it used to be easy when they first when they first connected your phone to the airport and the airline experience. I loved it because no one else was doing it. They were all waiting in lines, and I would just go up and like bleep, and then I give them my bags. There'd be nobody else there, and then I go on. But now I don't know. It's gotten confusing. Like it's like you got to punch in a lot of stuff on the kiosk window. Like why don't I just have a barcode I scan and it chugs out the bag? Like, that's not my experience. Is that your experience, Brad?
Yeah, I have a different experience. I do think it's more simple than what you're describing in my experiences anyway.
Okay,
But it is further complicated with ticketing counters and bag drops, and often those are separate now. So, I mean, I think that maybe just took a little bit of me getting used to it. So I go to the kiosk. What I usually do is just slide in a credit card to validate who I am.
Yeah.
And then it pulls up the itinerary, it prints out the bags, the bag slips.
Yeah, but there's a lot of questions.
Are there?
Like you're making decisions there, even if you've done it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like you're like picking the person, then every single bag, you got to do it for every single bag. Like I just want to wave the QR code and it just chugs out, you know, four or five or six, whatever it is, things to put on my bag. And then that's it. But there's a lot of it's like the hotels we talked about. What are they typing? Why am I typing all this stuff? Why am I selecting
materials and stuff like that?
And then you're selecting the person, you're going through it each time. This would be better to do like a couple weeks from now after I travel because it'll be fresh. It's been a year since I've done this, but I don't know. It's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not as good as I would expect it could be.
And you could also streamline it. It seems like a UX designer, even the three of us, could get together for a weekend and reframe the user experience of that kiosk, right?
Yes.
And probably cut out a number of steps.
Yeah. For example, why do you have to have the kiosk and then you go through bleep, 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 punching, credit card swiping, you get the things and then you get in line and then there's a person behind the counter that does type, and then they do some shit. They put it on a conveyor belt, and then you go on your way. Here's what I want. Here's how I would streamline this. There's the line. You go up. She has a little scanner. Like you go when I go to the gym now, I show the QR code. The four, five tickets or tags come out. She puts them on the bag. You don't have to stay for that. She's like, okay, thanks, bye. And then you go. And I don't need a ticket. For some reason, they print me a ticket too. I don't know why that's still happening. Why can't I just use my phone for that as well?
No, I think what you're describing is what happens most of the time.
That's not what happens. Do you go to LAX? They have those little kiosks. There's like four or five of them and people around in a circle.
Yeah.
Maybe they do that to kind of, otherwise the line would be ridiculously long.
I think the other thing they have to do is weigh the bags. They have to have some kind of check on.
So it is a little clunky.
So there could be a scale. You put it down and if you're over 70 pounds, then like, you know, snipers like just take you out from the...
Yeah, anything over 40 pounds, they'll charge you. I think it used to be 50, now it's 40. Okay. Soon it'll be 30. Okay.
That's true. It was 50, it's 40 now?
Yeah.
Holy crinoly. Okay, good to know. Thanks, guys.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, the best way to do it, get yourself TSA pre-check, carry on, walk through the gate, walk through security, you're at your gate in 10 minutes.
Ah, the life, all that crap. The life of the single man. That's
right. Oh, wait, I forgot to mention that. Be single. Only take
one t-shirt, one pair of jeans, buy your underwear there, you're good.
Yep.
All right, so moving on. I apparently am the only one who has problems with this kiosk.
No, I mean, it's not great, and it's not consistent, you know, and we're talking about consistency of design, which is definitely beneficial for all of us, right?
You guys want to mosey on down to the security check-in?
I mean, come on. We can't really spend too much time on security check-in. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. Joe uses TSA pre, which is fine.
Necessary.
The rest of us don't.
I can't. I mean, got that murder
we're at the mercy of the line. We got to take off our shoes. Fine. I'm not going to complain about that.
Let's get on the plane then. You want to get on the plane?
Plane.
Or do we want to wait?
We could talk about the queues and all that stuff and zones and all that, which is, I don't know, definitely frustrating if you're not in zone one. Or a medallion member. But, you know, whatever. I mean, we're not going to fix this.
I don't know. You're right.
Southwest, they have it like, you know, you check in and that's your position where you can check in the line. That makes sense. I think that's the most fair.
Hang on. We can fix this because there've been some proposals about the best way to seat people. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what they are. I've read articles on this before, but it's like this whole idea of going through first class, which by the way is cruel. And then walking to the toilet seat that you have.
You're right. It's incorrect UX. It's not being thought of from a UX perspective.
There's a faster way to do this. Right. It's totally a more equitable way.
Right.
Or both. Right. Like go in the back and go in the front.
Pyramid boarding, window to aisle. Mythbusters did a whole thing where they tested every pattern. And the honest best one was like pyramid, like backs and sides to front. But then you got families and you got people that need to sit together. And then suddenly
But there's a better way.
Like it. There is a better way.
There's a better way.
And they're not they're not doing it. Through research and science, they're not doing it. Okay.
They're not using research for the boarding process. So the fix is use research for the boarding process. We're not going to do the work for you, but it's out there.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Is there anything about the waiting experience that you guys like now that's changed over the years with technology? Like either getting food, like ordering food or entertainment? Really? Because I
mean on the plane or before the plane?
No, before the plane. Because I do feel like there are some things that there are like some little center. There are some airports I've been to where it's like they have a great setup for like laptops and charging and stuff like that. And then there are other ones where it's like people are like trying to find that seat to wait, like, and plug all their devices in. And then other people are like staring at them, like waiting for them to leave.
What I'm thinking of is the Starbucks experience. You know, we can use Starbucks as a proxy for all restaurants and airports. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It just seems to be ubiquitous. It still seems very much like a mad dash. And a cattle herd for that Starbucks line. And obviously using Starbucks as the example, there's technological solutions to fix that.
Where you use
your mobile device to order and pick up and all that. So you don't have these giant lines.
Can you do that in the airport? Can you use like you do at any Starbucks?
But you should do that in all of these experiences. Any line.
Right. Okay.
Well, I'll counter that because this is actually a post-pandemic thing. But any like sit down or bar that you want to go, like actually like, sit at now they have just like iPads that are up. You have to like put in your own order.
Yeah. I've seen that.
I kind of like having an actual like person behind the bar come up and
at a restaurant, and I'm talking about lines for
I think both they're two different things. I'm trying to separate those two separate things, but like yours would work for like, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts walk up and grab and go,
right?
And it's like they're doing it. It's almost like they've done it opposite. They're doing it the wrong way for both ones. They should be doing iPads for Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts, and restaurants and bars should still have people.
I really don't like, and Dave, you're going to say the same thing that I'm going to say. I really don't like touching grimy iPads that everyone else has been touching.
He wants to use his phone. That's not what I was going to say. What I was going to say is we can cut this episode now. We can cut it short because I've solved the UX of airport travel.
Okay.
It is on Father's Day. I'm going to say this. Be single. Travel light And then you have time to stop at the bar and stop and get a good burger. And it's all good.
Yeah. And that's our episode. Thanks so much for listening. I'm just kidding.
Awesome. Oh, my God. Awesome. All right, let's get on. You guys want to get on the plane?
Let's get on the plane.
Yeah, let's get on the plane. All right, so we're on the plane, and this is where it becomes a stand-up bit. The food is bad, the seats are too small, and things don't work. Anything to add?
Bad Wi-Fi.
Hold on, guys. Let me just say again, you are 30,000, 40,000 feet in the air traveling, what, 300 to 500 miles per hour through clouds, and you are complaining that the Wi-Fi is bad? Like, look, here's what you do, okay? Let me just tell you. You get on Netflix, you get on Hulu, you download a bunch of shit, and just shut up. you don't even need any of those things.
I have to work when I fly.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, that's a problem with our society. You're in the air for 5 hours. Just stop. Just don't do it.
But I'll tell you what, if the Wi-Fi sucks, don't charge me $45 for it. Charge me $5.
Right. Well, I agree with that.
They're changing that. Like, I hate to bring them up, but isn't Elon Musk's company doing, is it him that somebody's doing like airline travel Wi-Fi improvement technology?
Yes. But that's speculative. I don't think it's substantial. Yeah. It's just like something that they are talking about. I don't think that's real.
No, yet. I think they're doing it. I read an article recently that, go ahead. I'll Google.
And I think it just comes down. I think that's just kind of like generally, you just get less for more. Like if you pay for a business or first class seat, unless you're on an international flight, you're really not in a first class seat. It's you get a slightly better seat with slightly better food for three times the price. Mm-hmm. If you're paying for Wi-Fi, you're paying three times as much for. You know, you got to pay for
it's baggage. You got to pay for the. You got to pay for non-functional Wi-Fi. I think we should just call it non-functional. It just doesn't work. I mean, I might be able to send a text message, but I can't like stream video, even if I pay. Yeah. Even if they say I can.
It's so funny, Brad, because I was so confident that I was right and you were wrong. And the first article that came up was in-flight Wi-Fi, the dream, the dismal reality in the future. This is from The Independent, UK. Airlines were so preoccupied with whether or not they could put Wi-Fi in the sky, they didn't stop to think if they should, or more precisely, if it was any good.
Right.
So it's asking if this is getting better. I'm not going to read the whole article. Oh, I don't have an account. So that's fine. We're going to close that out.
That's another episode for another day.
So my point is, guys, maybe you don't need it. Just download some shit beforehand. Yeah. Like I tell my daughter every time when she complains that she has nothing to do on the plane, I'm like, well, I told you yesterday to download some TV shows and some movies before you got on the plane.
And is nothing sacred? I mean, can we just not take those 4 hours to not work, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah.
I wish, that is the dream.
I mean, you're a single guy. You should be focused on joining the Mile High Club. You know what I'm saying?
So let's get on to the next topic, the Mile High Club. No, I'm kidding.
Anyway, have you guys seen those seats that they're proposing where like
they're almost like double-decker seats?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this. For people who haven't – for our users who don't know what we're talking about, just look up double-decker seats so you can get a picture. But if you don't have time to do that, basically they're taking – they're trying to squeeze more people in. So they're pushing that you have a regular seat, then you push one seat up. So somebody's butt is in your face, right? Not really. I mean, you can't see it, right? But they're up higher towards the roof. And then they take out the carry-ons. This is the part I didn't understand. Somehow they integrate that into the seats where they're putting all the luggage in the seats because there's no space up top. It just looks like a can of sardines. Like, it just looks terrible.
People have been using the can of sardines metaphor for airline seats for a long time, but this is almost taking it literally. People are actually on top of each other now.
But you know, I feel bad for the kid who did it. It was like a college kid or something, and like he's winning awards and everybody's calling him up, and like, yeah, it's like, and then the article hits the commoners. It's all us people, and everybody's, it's just the butt of all jokes. So this guy's life went from like, oh crap, I could be something, to like, oh drats, I better fill out that application for In and Out.
Are you saying that he's the Oppenheimer of air travel?
he is the source of all death. I have become death. What is
I have become death? Okay, so some solutions, right? I have flown semi-private. Have you guys? Do you know what semi-private is? It's not private, but it's almost private.
Is that kind of like the Uber of the, like you can join a
So I flew an airline called JetX, which I think is a subsidiary of JetBlue, I think. But fact check me on that. Here was the experience. So I went to a private hangar at the Burbank Airport, and I parked my car right up front. I think there was a valet. I think I just parked because there was space. I walked into this hangar. There was no security or anything like that. And then I had coffee and I sat in a nice recliner. And then I'm looking at this private jet in this hangar. Pretty cool experience. And I got on that. It was a small plane with 20 people, strangers, Joe, all similar. And we flew to Oakland, from Burbank to Oakland. And it was not much more expensive than had I flown Southwest or something like
really?
That. Really? But the experience was so superior.
You sure it's called JetX? Because I'm seeing like these fancy futuristic planes that you fly by yourself over JetX.
Yeah.
Is it Jet JSX?
Yes.
Oh, JSX. Got it. Okay, cool.
So that was fantastic.
Definitely, if you
only
have
a handful
means.
Of locations I could fly to. I could fly to Las Vegas, or I could fly to Oakland, or I could fly to a couple other places. Yeah. But the experience, holy cow. Number one, it felt like that promise of air travel.
Yeah.
Yes. Brad,
I'm going to challenge you as because the first article I found is a Nerd Wallet says JSX is private jet worth the cost. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like when you say it's not too much different price, and maybe you might be fudging a little. Yeah, because you're killing my joke. I wanted to make the joke that the other way to fix the UX of air travel is one, be single, two, be rich. So Brad is giving us the rich experience. Joe's giving the single. I am the blue collar bloke.
Is the way to go. Private travel is the best.
I think people have to understand that there are options. It's not necessarily about being rich. And to be specific, if I wanted to fly Jet Suite X, JSX, or whatever. And I wanted to go to Las Vegas on Thursday, June 30th. It would cost me $139.
Get out of here. Round trip? One way?
No, I think it's one way.
Okay.
But come on, man.
But let's compare with our trip to Hong Kong. Can we do that? Or do they only travel?
There's only a handful of airports. If I wanted to fly from Burbank, which I do, I can go to Napa, Dallas, Denver, Vegas, Monterey, Carmel, Oakland, Phoenix, or Reno. So those are my options, right?
But so maybe solution is those kind of like they fly certain places and that's the airline you take to go to those places.
And by the way, I mean, it's worth $139 just for that experience to go to a private hangar and valet your car and walk into a terminal where you're walk into a hangar where your airplane is right there.
Yeah. Somebody takes your bag, you walk right on.
Okay. I take it back. That's not cost prohibitive. It's probably more expensive than, you know, going on the airlines, but it doesn't seem like much.
You can definitely find a $59 seat. Yeah, on another airline.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you talk about the value, highly worth it.
Yeah, value. Because I mean, what are you going to pay in parking? What are you going to do?
Right.
You know, you're going to spend you're probably going to spend that in other ways just traveling.
They ain't Southwest no free coffee LAX. At LAX. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Have two cups of coffee. That's $15 easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
All right. So again, have money, be single. I think that's our episode.
Seriously, can we wrap this up? Is there anything else that we
I will say this about all the perks really, really fast. I don't want to go into this too much because it's one of these things that's just got to put up with it, and the airlines need to make money and stay afloat so we have ways to travel. But like, we're losing a lot. It feels like, again, with the trust issue, we're not gaining anything really. I mean, like most airlines now have the TV in the back of the seat, but I just use my phone, so that's not a perk. But it's like they're taking away how many bags we can go on. Mm-hmm. You just told me that I have to go from 50 to 40 when I check my bags, pounds. You're not getting food in a lot of instances. You got to pay extra for that. More costs, less benefits.
Yeah.
It's like they're really going to hit a point where it's like, if we didn't have to do this, right? Like if this was a shiny new thing we wanted to buy and we didn't have to, then we probably would stop being customers.
Well, I mean, I think if you couple all of that we've talked about with rising fuel costs, which will have an increase on the price of tickets, there will come a critical mass point where people choose to not fly. And I think even me, I'm in that category where I'm like strongly considering, sorry, mom, who listens to this podcast, I'm strongly considering not coming home for the holidays next year because it's just like, oh, come on, man.
Oh, well, I already have. I used to try to go back twice a year, you know, summer and holidays. I don't do holidays anymore ever. Like that's just, why would you do that? If this was a better experience and there was more trust and there was more benefits that, you know, instead of cost, I would go home Thanksgiving. I would go home Christmas. I would go home, summer.
Right.
It's better. But
And it doesn't have to just be lower cost. It could just be a better experience.
True.
Mm-hmm. Make me feel like I'm getting some value for what I'm paying for.
Great, great point. Yeah. Great point. Let's get futuristic really fast. Another solution.
Yeah.
I mean, these self-driving car plane situations. I mean, we've been waiting for the Back to the Future moment forever. I think it'll come eventually. I think at least short distance, you know, like you'll get in your car, you'll fly to San Francisco or Vegas, and that'll cut out a lot of the air travel for that. And it may kind of free up seats and they'll have to woo you back with benefits. You know, I don't know. Maybe what before I die. Yeah. You know,
I'll tell you what, I think I'm too old to become the CEO of a major airline. I think this should be a young man's game. And, you know, there's no innovation happening probably because these airlines are being run by people like us.
Yeah,
old people who are just resigned that a lot of these problems are just what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
anyway.
Oh, that's a good. That's actually a good blood point. I was just talking about old, but 20 years ago, the first time I flew to the UK on Virgin Airlines, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, Virgin was good.
Like that was even when Richard Branson was like almost kind of young himself, and he was doing that. Like the flight was absolutely amazing. Like, yes, let's get more of that kind of.
And he tried to innovate, and he failed. You know, I mean, that's part of it.
It's JSX is kind of like this too. It's like, so Joe, you're right, competition, but they got to stick it out. Like, yeah, like Virgin was great. You're right, but they couldn't compete with the larger airlines. I guess. Yeah. I don't know why it fell apart. It was a good experience.
If this does improve, I think it's going to be from unlikely sources of competition. It's not going to be from these hubs. It's not going to be from major airlines. It's not going to be from competitors coming along in that same venue. It's going to be from somebody who's going to rethink the experience and utilize smaller airports, smaller airplanes.
Yeah.
JSX is a good example. But, you know, they might not make it either.
Yeah. Well, so I think we solved it, guys.
All right.
I think we solved it. Be single.
Yep.
Be rich.
Yep.
That's it. And enjoy your Father's Day, right? Everybody. Well, it's in the past tense. I hope you had a good Father's Day.
Yes.
And you weren't stuck at an airport.
And for what it's worth, I did include a link to where American Airlines had piano bars and cocktail lounges. You guys can check it out.
Okay. He's right, Brad.
I'm going to fact check you in real time. And hang on a second. Okay, I'm seeing a picture of a cocktail lounge. Sure, that looks nice. Looking for a piano specifically, Joe.
American Airlines. I think it's down a little bit down the list, but
would you text?
That was actually the coach class that had the piano.
Where's this
lounge.
Link? I don't see a link.
Okay, I'm gonna dig deeper here to see if this was a real thing or promotional photos.
Wait, so dubious. Your link is messynessychick.com.
Yeah. You know, that reputable news source, messynessychick.com.
Why are you even researching more, Brad? Why are you researching more? That's totally reputable.
Right. I stand
corrected.
It's
a thing. It happened.
Okay.
It's a thing. It happened.
All right, Brad, you want to bring us home? Hey, Brad, you want to fly us home?
Well, that is our episode. Thank you all so much for listening to the Sucks Podcast. We are wishing you all safe travels, health, a well-designed life, and good experiences. We're recording.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just don't care about any of this.
Same. But it's Father's Day. Why are we doing this to ourselves?
Why are we doing this on Father's Day, man?
I could be eating pancakes right now.
I could be on the road to Santa Barbara right now.
Do 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 like do 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 do.